This is East Carolina offensive coordinator Donnie Kirkpatrick. We are talking one of my favorite things, Hired Football, and the sports objective.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond, along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, dude?
What's going on, man? Tired. I don't know if I'll make the whole podcast tonight, but I'll at least be a part of it. A lot going on in the world of college football with trying to keep up with all the realignment stuff and work a job. It's just tiring.
One of our favorite guests wearing a pirate hat. You know we got to love him. That's why you came on tonight. Matt Semenza, I know one thing. You're a happy camper because your wife, Chrissy, who went to Florida, she's happy because you have a guest home from Gainesville, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've kind of like adopted Florida. The Gators is like one of my favorite teams, you know, like a distant second to my Pirates. You kind of have to keep the peace in the house. But I always love talking SEC football, specifically Florida. So happy to have JC on tonight.
Yeah, by the way, you better not pick Florida State. I'm just saying. I just have a feeling that.
Wow, are you kidding? I'd be living in the shed.
Yeah. And with us tonight from the Pod Up with Shane Matthews show on YouTube, does a great job. Johnny, JC, how are you, man?
Yeah, good to be with you, Dave, Kyle, and Matt. Thank you guys for having me. I love being on the program here. And, you know, it was on, I guess, this time last year, and I was very pleased to be invited by Bubba Rosenbaum to come on board. So, you know, it's that time of year, guys. We're getting ready.
I told you he's a super fan, so – yeah. I'll make a point to when I'm getting ready, shaving or whatever I'm doing in the mornings, and I got kids to get to school, to elementary school, I'll make sure to watch and listen to you guys. But I enjoy the program. For those that don't know, I'm going to give you a chance before we dive into football. Tell everybody about the show. Shane Matthews, of course, one of the great quarterbacks in Florida history with the Gators.
Well, Shane and I go way back. We go back to the 90s. I was the ABC sports affiliate, sports director down here in Gainesville, and I met Shane as he was named a starting quarterback for the Florida Gators under Steve Spurrier in 1990. And we had a legendary run through the 90s. I was very fortunate to be able to cover the Gators and the University of Florida working here in Gainesville for that ABC affiliate down here. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. I didn't get paid much money, didn't make much money. It wasn't about the money, that's for sure, in this market. But we had a good time. And, you know, Danny Werfel, Rex Grossman, Shane Matthews, those guys were fantastic, and it was easy to cover them because they were always in a good mood because they always won. And the first year they played in 1990, they actually won the SEC on the field, but the conference or the NCAA took it away from them because they were on probation. So that's how it got started for me, and that's how I've come to know Shane for about 33 years now. And we go on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Pod Up with Matthews in the morning. I'm on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He's on Monday through Friday at 8 o'clock Eastern.
No doubt. And we're excited to have you on. As far as, man, this college football realignment is going nuts. It's going crazy. I have an analogy I want to use, and I forgot to use it the last show. So I want to get y'all's take on the college football realignment. I don't know how many kids play board games. When I was younger, I played the board game Risk, where you're taking all over the countries, you're taking this country, you're taking that country. And I feel like we're doing that with college football. It's like the Big Ten, the rich is getting richer. They're saying, okay, we're going to take Oregon now in Washington. And you look at the Pac-4, I guess it is now. I mean, I even heard the ACC is going to try to take those four reigning schools, which
ACC is just looking at two of them.
At two of them?
Cal and Stanford. They haven't got any interest in Washington State and Oregon State.
Well, but if they do that, I have a question for you guys. I've been dying to ask all day. Won't that mess up the grant of rights because it's a new contract?
Well, there would have to be an agreement that if they invited them, they would keep the same grant of rights agreement, I'm assuming. I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's nuts when you really look at that. Will the ACC throw a lifeline to Stanford and Cal? Would it be football only? Would it be all sports? I'm guessing football only. You know, who knows? I don't know. I could see Cal, Oregon State, Washington State end up in the Mountain West, and Stanford going independent. I'd like to say they were all four coming to the American. I know Michael Rasko is trying to make that happen. I don't think it's going to. I hope it does. I don't think it will. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Some people still think the Pac-12 is going to, those four are going to survive and take teams from the Mountain West and the American. It's just not going to happen. Their TV deal ends this year. That was the difference when the Big East got raided and, you know, what became the American, and they were on us with a couple of teams. They still had years on their TV contract. They've got no TV contract. It's up this year. There's none in place. Whatever they had negotiated, obviously, is off the table now because there's only four of them left. And there's no exit fees coming their way because the TV contract's up. So there's literally no exit fees. So I don't think that conference survives. It's going to be interesting to see where they go. I don't know, man. My gut tells me Stanford will either end up in the ACC or independent in some way, shape, or form. Maybe Cal, Oregon State, Washington State to the Mountain West, and maybe Cal to the Mountain West. I don't think you're going to see Stanford in the Mountain West. I think they'd go independent before then.
I don't think for those schools. Maybe I'm wrong. I know desperate times, desperate measures, but the American is a better league than the Mountain West.
It is, but there's going to have to be some serious money offered by ESPN. For that to happen, because they would, you know, the travel cost. ESPN is going to depend on how bad the ESPN wants to help the American out and get that West Coast content for that to happen.
Well, you have West Coast, you'd have from noon all the way up to, 10 o'clock at night, that 10 o'clock window. I mean, you'd have games all day long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would be in favor of it, but I just – the ESPN's going to have to pony up for it to happen.
JC, what do you think about this, JC? We have four remaining teams from the Pac-12, essentially homeless at this point with no TV contract. Yeah. What do you think of this situation? Like, do you have any thoughts, or do you see anything happening with this?
I think they're screwed. I mean, they're just screwed. They're screwed. Yeah. I mean, the thing is right now – they're in shock. They got to figure out, you know, Kyle mentioned the AAC. I mean, okay, I could go to that, but it's all about, you know, think about these spring sports. I don't know what they're going to do about those non-revenue sports, Matt, because what are you going to do? You're going to have the volleyball team travel from Pullman, Washington to Greenville, North Carolina, and take their chemistry lab.
There's a couple options there, JC. What you could do.
Yeah,
If you added those four, that would put us at that would put the American at 18, and then if you get, say, San Diego State and Boise from the Mountain West, that put us at 20. And half of our schools are in Texas. Yeah. So to me, what you do for football, football's not so important because it's easy to figure out. But for the Olympic sports, you divide it into two 10-team divisions. You have a Texas West division and then everything east of Texas division. That's how I would do it.
I mean, I guess there are ways. I mean, they can use their – I mean, they're smart guys. They can figure it out. But the Pac-12, as we know, is gone. I don't have a problem with any of this, because here's the reason why. You know, the presidents are doing the same thing that they're yelling at the players for doing. And so, to me, it seems somewhat hypocritical. It's a big money grab. And at some point, everybody's going to reconcile with the idea that this is all about money, and that's why they're doing it. And they have to get these television contracts to compete. Florida State is pissed because they feel like they're going to fall behind the SEC and the Big Ten teams if they can't somehow get out of that ACC deal. And without the money from Saudi Arabia or JP Morgan Chase, they're not getting out when you have a $120 million exit fee and about, I don't know how many hundreds of millions – or however many it is, to 2036. So I there's going to have to be some outside influence to get that going, because I just can't see them leaving that grant of rights deal or the exit fee in the ACC.
Well, they've talked about that with lawyers, Matt and Kyle and JC. The proposal they have, they've already floated out, guys, is what they're going to do. It's going to be, you know, when lawyers get in a room, they're going to negotiate. It'll come down. The question is, how much would it come down? But they said what they're going to do is they're going to give $400 million. It's $40 million a year for 10 years. Would the ACC take that? I don't think they would take that.
Because I heard $300 million.
Oh, wow.
Well, First of all, let's all remember this too. At Florida State and Clemson are making a lot of noise, but has anybody invited them to their conference yet? I mean, we don't know if they have or not. I mean, we're talking about them being wanting to get out, but where are they going to go? To my knowledge, has even come to the table.
Well, I don't think you can invite them because of that grant of rights.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, they don't own their rights to their home games. They can't go. It's just the way it is. And so you're right. It's going to have to take another financial incentive.
I mean, what would you do, Matt? I mean, you're because then you have Paul Feinbaum that's saying, Feinbaum is saying they're better in the SEC. Well, okay,
who's better in the SEC?
Florida State and Clemson.
Paul Feinbaum thinks everything's better in the SEC.
Paul Feinbaum's ears are better in the SEC.
They're big.
He thinks that the world begins and ends with. Now, no offense, JC. We love the SEC, but
we really don't.
Feinbaum drives me nuts because if you listen to him, and I know he gets paid by the SEC network, all that, but he, you know, you would think that there's no other football in the world.
Feinbaum's a complete clown. He's all an act.
No, look, here's the thing. He started out. The reason why he's SEC centric.
Hey, he started out Birmingham Radio, yeah.
Right, and he's on the SEC network.
Yeah, he's a client. So
why am I going to talk about most of the stuff you're going to talk about? You're simulcasting a show. Not that I'm here to defend. He can defend himself, but he's simulcasting a show.
Oh, he's smart. He's smart. But he's a clown.
How's he a clown?
He says stuff. Ask him about East Carolina football. If he would know his head from his ass. That's why he's a clown. He doesn't know anything but the SEC. He's right. Not well versed. Ask him off the top of his head what East Carolina's record was last year if we went to a bowl game. See if he knows. He knows.
I would love to have Kyle from the McGrange call in. You are a legendary caller on Pirate Radio.
Yeah.
On the fifth quarter. Why don't you call in the show? Because
I have no interest.
Kyle wouldn't sit around and wait for 5 hours to get on either. Kyle's got better things to do. But, you know, the thing with Paul was that it was nothing until Saban showed up. When Saban showed up and the Alabama thing got going finally, and Auburn and Alabama created that rivalry, and then some crazy man poisoned a bunch of trees. That's where he got all his attention, and when that happened, they started the following started to grow more more globally. Let's just say, and so there you have it. And the SEC jumped on him because they consider him the authority of the league that they have.
I just don't like his style. Give me Tim Brando in that style of broadcasting over Paul Feinbaum.
No, I love Brando, but I just you know like the only thing that
he's the LSU guy. He's all LSU. I mean, he's all LSU. He was doing LSU television when I was doing Florida. Fortunately for him, he went a lot further than I did. But Tim's LSU, man. He's a Tiger.
Yeah, but Brando, if you ask him about East Carolina, he'll talk about him with respect. We're Feinbaum, you know, we'll call us Eastern Carolina and pretend like you don't even know what our mascot is.
Yeah.
Well, he had a guy on today that was very complimentary of he talked really highly of obviously Pat Dye, and he talked highly of East Carolina and all the big wins before Pat Dye came to Auburn, and maybe it's because of that, but he was speaking highly today. I listened to his show that and
he was speaking highly or his guest?
No, he was about how we at East Carolina we've won a lot of big games, and it started with he was talking about Pat Dye, and then he did talk about that, and he jokingly said that when he was a young reporter, when Pat Dye came to Auburn, he said somebody asked him, you know, how long is it going to take before you beat Alabama? He said 60 minutes. but anyway, the only thing I don't like is when the arrogance of they have a cupcake schedule in Michigan, and they're easily going. They don't even need you don't even need Harbaugh on the sidelines. I guess what they could do is just have no coaching staff, because you need to go ahead and give the trophy to Michigan because they're automatically going to win the national championship.
Yeah.
If I'm Harbaugh, I would hate the fact that okay, when they have success and then all of a sudden Everybody's just saying they're the anointed one. They're going to win the national. I've heard so many talking heads. I'm like, we haven't even played one down at college football. We have no idea in reality who's going
to
win.
Well, they have to talk about somebody. You know, they could talk Georgia. That's old hat. And quite frankly, I think, as we'll get into, JC probably knows a lot more about Georgia than I do. But I think, you know, when you lost Munkin, why in the world bring back Bubba? I just do not like that decision. Yeah. JC, we'll get into Florida. What do you think about that decision, the Bulldogs bringing in Mike Bubba as offensive coordinator? I don't like that at all.
No, I was surprised by it. Kirby and Heathen must have something to surprise us with. I'm not sure. I think it's just the coaching world is so small, Kyle. And to me, it's just where they're comfortable. I think Kirby, you know, I can't really second guess anything he's done thus far, though, Kyle. I mean, he's been very, you know, very successful to this point. And, you know, Georgia before Kirby really was not, and they couldn't beat Alabama, and they just didn't have the it factor to win these close games under Mark Richt. And so I can't really second guess what Kirby does. But yes, I was surprised to see that hire. But I'm not surprised that Georgia is picked to finish, number one in the East for sure, and maybe even in the conference right now by the media.
I think Munkin's way undervalued as an offensive mind, and I don't think people. I don't think people are taking that loss, him going to the NFL from Georgia, and then them bringing him up. I think it's gonna. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I think Georgia's gonna take. I mean, not a huge step back. I don't think they're going to go 7-5. Well, but I think they're going to take a step back this year. I think that losing Munkin, and then I'm going to make a bold prediction here, and I have nothing against Mike Bobo as a person, but I bet you Mike Bobo's one and done at Georgia.
What have you had a chance to look at that schedule? I mean, that schedule that they have is just so lame. And I'm not blaming them, but they have
no. What is their non-conference? Obviously, Georgia Tech. What is the rest of their non-conference?
Their non-conference schedule isn't even worth mentioning. You've got Ball State. Tennessee State or Ball State or somebody like that. You've got Georgia Tech at the end of the year, but their first real true road test is in November at Tennessee, and anything can happen by the time they get to that game. But honest to God, if you pull up the Georgia schedule this year, it is really easy, and I can't imagine them not just having their way with everybody up until that Tennessee game in November. But the East is what it is. I think the surprise that we're all living with where I'm at right now is that Chris Doering, a former Florida Hall of Famer, has the Gators sixth in the East. He picked them sixth, and for some reason he's got this love affair with the Kentucky Wildcats. And he's got them second. And I know Devin Leary's going to have a nice run there. But let's be honest. I mean, Florida 6. If you went to Biloxi or Vegas or anywhere they allow sports gambling, you can get the Florida Gators at over 5.5 wins right now if you like money. And I mean, they had an awful roster last year and won 6 games. And that's not acceptable. But it's over 5.5. So if you like money, send somebody down to Biloxi and go ahead and throw what you got on the Gators over 5.5. I can't imagine them not winning 6 games this year. Shane thinks they're going to win 8. I don't see that, but maybe they will. I don't. You know, we'll see. They're unknown right now.
Hey, JC, all we have to do is drive up to Portsmouth now. Portsmouth, right across. It won't be, and we have sports gambling starting next year in North Carolina.
Oh, fantastic. Well, the Indians here in Florida still will not, we haven't figured out how to do that yet. The Indians want it, but they don't want to share it with the other companies. So we got a big problem down here in Florida. Can't do sports gambling. It's unbelievable. Third most populous state in America, and you can't do mobile sports betting. I went to Illinois 3 weeks ago, and I had all kinds of fun on my FanDuel. I can't even breathe sports betting down here in Florida. It's unbelievable.
That's amazing. I just assumed you guys would.
No, they got the damn horse racing, the dog racing, all this crap, the high lie down there. They got such garbage down here to gamble on. Lotto, I mean, dear God. And yet, they can't figure out sports betting.
Johnny delivers, baby.
Well, all the Jewish guys from the North got that paramutual wagering crap booked down in South Florida, and they kicked the Indians out with the Hard Rock. They tried to open an app last year on the Hard Rock app, sports betting app. We were all having fun for about 3 weeks, and then some crazy federal judge or district judge or whatever she was shut it down. So we're going to have to wait until they can figure out this thing. It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Come on up to Jersey, JC. We'll take you to Atlantic City. Yeah. Hey, and I know a few guys on the piers. We'll get it done, you know.
All right. Over 5.5, man. If you like money, God almighty, they got to win 6 games. Come on.
So the 5.5. So the over-under on the Gators is 5.5. I got to look at the schedule. I just looked at Georgia's schedule. Georgia's schedule is extremely weak. You're right about that.
I think Florida can win 7. I'll go 7.
That's what I said. I said 7-5. Shane's got 8-4. You got a couple of 9-win guys, and then you got Chris Dorsey.
Well, all you got to do is go 6-6 to get the over.
Right. So. That's it. I mean, come on. They did 6-6 with a garbage roster last year. Yeah, they couldn't stop anybody. They're the worst defense.
I'm assuming you guys play Florida State last game of the year?
Yeah. Florida State's always
I mean, you literally can take Georgia and the over. Excuse me. Florida and the over. And then if you guys are 5 wins and needing to beat Florida State to go 6,
yeah,
bet Florida State for that game, and you're going to win either way.
You're going to win either way, Kyle. So that's exactly right. You've got really 3 patsies: Vanderbilt, you got some other team, McNeese State, and some other garbage team, and then you've got the SEC, where I know they're going to win a couple of SEC games. They always win a few of those. So, yeah, they beat Texas A&M last year. Nobody remembers that. They beat their ass. So I don't know. We'll see.
I think a lot of people are beating Texas A&M. Like,
I mean,
even App State, JC, App State.
App State. That's right. App State. Yeah, I can't wait until you guys are running up and down the field on Michigan. I can't wait to see it, because you may not stop them, but I think you're going to score. So if you're going to give me the 36, just go ahead and put me down for a few bucks, Matt. Can you do that for me, please?
JC, I got Jimmy 2 times on the other line.
Get me Jimmy 2 times.
We got you at 36, and I got 500 on the Gators plus 5.5.
Buddy,
this is great.
If you like money, it's just if you like money. I mean, some folks don't need money, but if you like money, go get it. But
I got to pay for my kids' tuition, so JC's going to help me when my kids go to college. I'll put a college fund, and I'll just get him to pick all this stuff.
Well, I'm gonna lose my Sunshine State parlay with Florida plus 7 at Utah. They probably won't win that. I'll cover it. And Florida State over LSU. I got Florida State plus 3 in Orlando against LSU. Everybody forgets how Florida State kicked their ass up and down the field last year in the Superdome because Jaden Daniels couldn't figure out anything. He's better now, obviously, and that's going to be a tough game for them to win. But they're getting 3. So we'll see.
You mentioned the game against Utah. The Gators open up with the Utes Thursday night.
Yeah,
September 1st. It's going to be a great game to watch if you're a neutral fan, like you know, us here on the podcast, with the exception maybe of Matt. Looking forward to that one.
He's got to put up with Chrissy.
Yeah, that's what I just said. With the exception of Matt, like what do you think about that game? I mean, obviously traveling. Yeah. The Utes got you guys in Gainesville last year. You got to go to Salt Lake City this year. Do you think the Gators can go on the road and I guess, Eric, what's the spread in that game? Utah's slight favorite?
Yeah, no, Utah's a 7.5-point favorite.
Okay.
And my little parlay has Florida State and Florida. I don't know if I like that. It really just depends on Kyle and Matt and Dave. It depends on Cam Rising. You know, he busted his ACL in the Rose Bowl, and they lost to Penn State. If you think about it, that's January, and we're going to August 30th at Salt Lake City. I can't really say for certain that he's going to even start in that game. I mean, right. Think about it. It's 8 months. And what kind of practice time are you going to get throughout August? So it's really 7 months with a torn ACL. I don't know a lot of guys who come back 100% or even mentally from a torn ACL in 7 months. But having said that, Utah's got a fantastic defense. We don't know what Florida's going to be able to present. Other than a massive offensive line, if it's any good, I don't know. But they'll run the ball, and they'll try to keep the score down. And Utah's good on defense. It's going to be a very exciting – I'm going to go. I'm going to be at Salt Lake for that night. I can't wait to get there and play some golf at the Promontory and just see what it's all about in that part of the country as they play the Florida Gators on August the 30th. So
I really like
it. I mean, one thing about them, one thing about Utah is when Cam Rising is healthy, when he's, playing, I mean, they're completely different. He's the heart and soul of that team. Yeah. I'm a big fan of him. He's got a swagger he plays with.
They should have beat Florida last year. You know, they had the ball first and goal, fumbled it in the end zone, turned it over. at the end of the game, they had the ball, first and goal, plenty of time. Verizon threw a pick in the end zone. They had two chances to score. They should have. If they score one of those two chances, they beat the Gators, but they didn't, and Florida won that game. And then Utah went on to win the Pac-12.
Yeah, you're correct. Actually, I misspoke earlier. I said that they got you last year in Gainesville, but you guys actually won that game. I remember that now. Utah had every opportunity to and couldn't get it done.
That's right. They turned the ball over twice in the end zone. But Rising's a real deal. Their tight end's a real deal. Their defense is stout. The coach is excellent. They'll have 65,000 fans in Salt Lake. It'll be great. And that'll be, you know, right before you guys run Michigan out of the building at 12 o'clock on Saturday.
I can't wait to call Kyle and said, dude, you could have been here with us.
He's not going to the big house.
I have no interest in watching us go in and get our brains beat in.
But he's a pirate.
So, JC, just in case you haven't figured it out yet.
Dave, you want to pay my way to Michigan? I'll go.
You ever see – I don't know if you ever watch Hannity or some of these political shows, but, like, you know how they'll have, like, you know, Hannity will have a guest on and they're, you know, they just argue back and forth all night.
Yeah.
This is Kyle and Dave. They don't agree on much when it comes to sports.
Well, they love their pirates. They love their pirates.
They agree on that.
We agree on music. We, for the most part, we agree on music.
Pirates should have beat the damn Gators down here. You had us down here. What was it?
2015.
2015, yeah.
Yeah, if we'd had a quarterback, we would have won.
Our quarterback went down, what was it, guys, a week before the season with Ben
Kirk? It was about two weeks before the season.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. I didn't mean to cut you off, man. I was going to say Blake Kemp, right? He played his ass off.
He played well that game. He played up to his ability, threw a pick at the end.
Yeah.
Down in the red zone. But we almost beat the Gators. Well, this Michigan team's a little bit better than that Gator team was.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit.
Let me tell you a quick story, guys. JC, you'll appreciate this. Yeah. So I was at that game in 2015 with about 40 Gators. So we had a big tailgate party. Yeah. We went to the game. They talked trash the whole night. We're going to kill East Carolina. This and that. I stayed quiet. First offensive possession of the game, we threw a deep fade route.
Oh, yeah.
To the left corner of the end zone for a touchdown. Yeah. I lost it. And then at the very end, we're driving down the field.
Yeah. Should have won.
The quarterback fumbles the ball, right? Did I have that right, Dave?
It was a pick or a fumble. I can't remember now.
It was a fumble.
It's a fumble, yeah.
20-yard line.
Oh.
Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I mean, it's just one of those days. But they played their hearts out. And, you know, they're always tough. My first TV job was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I covered some of this. Brett Favre was the quarterback for the Golden Eagles. One of the best games that came to M.M. Roberts Stadium was the East Carolina game. And it rained like hell, but I was there, and it was fun to watch.
Jeff Blake versus Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Two NFL quarterbacks. We got comments and questions tonight, and let's go here to Kenneth, who says, go Pirates and Gators, ECU undergrad 04, and at UF grad in UF in grad school now, lifelong UFN, have family in Ocala.
Oh, cool. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, Ocala's a great place. Marin County is booming down there. They like business in Marion County, whereas the liberals in Alachua County do not. But having said that, it's good to know. Good to have you with us. And I'd certainly everybody has to remember that the one thing I get a lot of grief about up here is Florida is my graduate school. I actually went to Alabama. And so so I get it from all angles, but they haven't really said much since 2008. So I've been okay so far, since then.
So is your allegiance first to Bama?
It's Alabama. That's my alma mater. But I did graduate work at UF, and that's where I started the TV business. And my whole family is Florida Gator grads. So I live in Gainesville, born and raised, and I guess I love the Gators too. So.
Okay. And you got to love Shane Matthews, right?
Shane is something. I've known him for 30-something years, and he's the same guy he was back then. Very low-key, but he knows football and the offensive side of the game as good as anybody. I've talked to so many people in the business, and he is very bright. They gave him a color commentary job here. He coached in the what was that league that just got done that The Rock runs?
The XFL.
So he was the OC for the worst team in the league, but they had one of the better offenses statistically, and that was the Orlando Guardians. So He does well. He does well, and he knows his craft, and that's about the extent of it.
It's gonna be fun.
JC, so I gotta give you a hard time about one thing. All right.
Go ahead.
You do have one massive cupcake on the schedule this year.
Oh.
And I mean the cupcake of all cupcakes. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The Charlotte 49ers. The Charlotte 49ers.
That was the other one.
49ers. You got one of the best coaches. You got one of the best coaches in all of America in his mind. Coach
I don't know a damn thing about the 49ers.
Neither does anyone else.
Yeah, that's right. Except they're going to take a check, and they're going to take a check and run out of town after that game.
October 21st, we're playing them, and that dude is already talking all kinds of smack.
He's on you. It's an in-state rivalry, man. In-state rivalry.
They want it to be. You know what? I'll actually give him a little credit. If he's doing it for the right reasons, if he's talking trash to East Carolina and App State and pumping his chest and banging on podiums and creating enemies, if he's doing it strategically as a strategy, if he's doing it as a strategy to get interest for Charlotte 49er football and to create rivalries with East Carolina and App State, then he's a genius. If it's his natural personality, then he's a complete idiot. I'm not sure which one it is. That's what I keep telling people. Not sure if this. I guarantee you this. He will either be the kind of coach that wins 8 or 9 games in his first year, or he's going to go 0-12. There's going to be very little in between.
He is the Rex Ryan of the AAC. I'm telling you, Rex Ryan. He smells and reeks of Rex Ryan. You know, he's going to give you all these things. We're going to win the Super Bowl. We're going to do all this stuff and it's
crazy. Well, but you know what? He kind of also reminds me a little bit of Jim Leavitt. And Jim Leavitt I don't think he ever got the credit for what he did at South Florida building that program. And they haven't been the same since they fired him. And so that's what scares me.
Great coach.
They fire every coach at USF, including
Skip. Yeah, I know.
I don't know why, but Alabama's actually playing USF in Tampa this year in the third weekend of the season. I have no idea who got that, who had that idea, but we're going to try to make both games. That one in the afternoon, come back.
Recruiting, JC.
I guess. I mean, Nick shouldn't have much trouble, though. He doesn't have much trouble in South Florida. But, Leavitt, you mentioned Leavitt, Kyle. I think they were number 1 or 2 in the country after they beat FSU for about a minute and a half.
Yeah, they were right up there.
That's as good as it got at South Florida.
He took them to a bowl game every year. They thought they could do better, but they have not reached those levels. They had a brief little Was it Charlie Strong? Somebody had a brief little run there. Willie Taggart. Taggart had a brief run there that was successful, but it didn't last long.
No, not at all.
Strong was there too.
But he was a disaster.
Yeah, huge disaster.
Yeah, but
this is the last 3 coaches they've had. Am I wrong on that?
The last two. Taggart won there. He left and went to Oregon and then Florida State. But
that's right.
The last two.
Okay. Yeah. It feels like Scott got fired and Strong got fired. It feels like they just fired. Skip Holtz got fired. 3 out of the last 4, right?
Correct.
No on campus facility. Tough to win there.
Yeah, they're building one. They're making plans to build one. So.
Yep.
They're raising something like $250 million, guys. $200 million, $250 million between they and I was going to say Vegas. God, they and Memphis are raising a lot of money. Dwarfs are $60 million. We're raising right now with Pirates Unite.
I think we're gonna. It is what it is. So they're going to be building stadiums with nowhere to go. It looks like to me. So.
Hey, we're going to have I'm telling you guys, the AAC is a lot better shape than the Pac-12.
So, I think Oresco's done a good job there. I mean, he's kind of unsung hero, so to speak. I mean, he gets on the Sirius radio, and he has a lot of good things to say. I like the conference. I think they do the best they can, and it's all about securing television money. And I don't know what the payout is per school in East Carolina's conference.
$8 million.
How much?
$8 million.
$7 million.
Yeah, that's.
Compared to the SEC, it's nothing. Compared to the rest of the group, it's actually the highest of all the Group of 5 conferences.
Okay,
that's sad. I mean, that's just
reality.
Just shows the difference the haves and the have-nots. And when I hear Florida State whining about what is it, $20-30 million a year from the ACC, 40. I'm like, shut the hell up. I think what's really pissing FSU off. it ain't Florida. It's that UCF's making more money than them now.
Oh, it's true. They're just worried about falling behind, and that's what they're trying to get out of. But Bobby was invited, and Bobby said he didn't want to go or come to the SEC. And that was back in the 80s, I think it was. And he actually said, I like winning. He said, I don't want to go. I like winning. So,
thanks, Bobby.
Yeah. They've got a great coach now in Norvell. I really like him. And
I know.
I was glad when he left Memphis to come.
See, Norvell, guys, he's the classic example in college football of, you know, a coach needs a few years to get the program, on the right track. And Norvell, prior to Florida State, he came from Memphis. He did a hell of a job at Memphis. He really did an outstanding job. He's a great – if you watch him, like if you really watch him, he's a great play caller. But after his first year at Florida State, they wanted to run him out of town. And then things were even shaky his second year. But I kept saying to people, because I'm just a believer in the guy, I said, if you stick with him, it's going to pay dividends. And you started to see it last year. They had a good season. And I think he's got that thing back on the right track. But just from a pure offensive play calling perspective, I think he's among the best. I really do.
No doubt. And you look at Napier, I pray that they will – Are Florida fans, are they patient with him? Because he's a great coach.
They are. They like his organization. They had a practice on Saturday, and they let the fans come in. First time this has happened since, I think, Muschamp in 2014, that they actually let fans come and watch in the stadium to just a simple practice. And so he's trying to get on people's good side, keep the honeymoon going. But six wins won't keep it going. And so he knows that. And I think this roster is completely different, absolutely 100% different. Well, there's a couple guys, running backs, but the wide receivers are different. The offensive and defensive lines are different. The front seven's going to be different. The quarterback's going to be different. Everything's going to be very different with this roster. And so if he can get to eight, that would be a hell of a job.
What's the to get to eight? Give me your key must-win games if you're going to get eight.
I think you have to beat South Carolina, Missouri, and Kentucky. You have to beat those three. You're going to beat Vanderbilt, I think, even though Vanderbilt beat them pretty badly up in Nashville. They'll be coming down here this time. So you assume they're going to beat Vanderbilt. But you have to win those three against those three Eastern Division teams, Kyle. And I don't think anybody's delusional thinking that they're going to go to Baton Rouge and win, or even in Jacksonville and beat Georgia, or even for that matter going out to Salt Lake. But I do think if you get those three very winnable games, remember Kentucky's beaten them I think 3 years in a row now. It's crazy. But you got to win two of those three or all three of those games to get to seven or eight wins. And if they can do that, which used to be pretty expected, nowadays it's iffy. They ran South Carolina out of the building last year, but South Carolina had a better finish, and even though they lost the bowl game. But really, those are the games, Kyle, that they have to win.
I'm worried about that Charlotte game for you, JC.
Charlotte, McNeese. The Tennessee game will be fun to watch. We'll see if Joe Milton can get the job done for Tennessee down here. It'll be rocking. But Florida, I said this the other day on the show, on the podcast, Florida could easily be 1-2 after the third week, and that's going to get some people a little cranky. At the very least, you want to be 2-1. Going into week four at Kentucky, because if you're 1-3 going into week four at Kentucky and you end up going 1-4, then they'll be jumping off the ship like rats off the boat, man. They'll be losing their minds down here, and that's how they are. They go nuts down here.
I know it will, and hopefully I love Napier, so I hope they'll give him a chance. We'll see. JC, how can people get with you, and tell us about the show again before we go.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you tonight, and I'm really hoping for good things for the Pirates and the folks in Greenville. It's a great place. You can watch us on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m., or anywhere you can get Spotify, YouTube, whatever the hell these outlets are. At Matthews in the Morning on Facebook Live and YouTube. My Twitter is at JC Sports Radio, and we'll try to keep you entertained at least for 30 minutes.
All right, sounds good. JC, man, the best to you, and give our best to Shane. And when you got to come up here to a game. You and Shane, you got to come up, and we'll take very good care of you.
I'll take you up on that, Dave. Matt, Kyle, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. Good luck, and go Pirates.
Thanks, right. JC.
Thank you, JC.
Okay, man.
Appreciate it. You know, guys, I really like having JC on the show. He, you know, very down to earth guy. He's, even though he's in the SEC, JC, you can still hear me, so I'm talking good about you.
I'm trying. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
If you hit the leave, there's a little button on the bottom. There it is. Okay. Jesus
Christ. It's 9:30. It's past my bedtime. Thanks, guys. We'll see you.
All right, JC.
But I was going to say, guys, JC doesn't have any of that SEC kind of – he doesn't have that SEC kind of, like, arrogance you see from so many people. So I appreciate that about
him. Nah, he comes across as a good dude, a very genuine guy. I like him a lot. Sometimes we have guests up here, and I'm ready for him to get off the air. And I enjoyed having him talk. But speaking of guests that you don't want to have get off the air, you got the voice of the Tulane Green Wave, the most impersonated man in Pirate Nation, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Corey Glore.
Am I really the most – how am I the most impersonated man in Pirate Nation? I have a pretty generic Midwestern voice.
There's nothing generic about – hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Kyle. Hello.
Yeah, I think it's just Kyle.
Nah, there's a lot of people that does. I've heard Clip do it. I've heard Bubba do it. I've heard a lot of people do Corey Glore impersonations.
Yeah. I didn't think I ranked above the rest of the pack in terms of most impersonated person to ever come through Greenville, North Carolina, though.
No, yeah, you're right up there. You're right up there. I'm telling you, people love you though, Corey. Hey, let me tell you something. There's been people just on message boards praying for you, just praying something would happen that maybe you have a sex scandal at Tulane or something, or you know, somehow you'd end up back in Greenville because Lord knows we needed some sort of intervention.
I'm here in Tulane. That's what I'll say. I don't know what more you want to talk about in terms of that. But
don't you want to comment in depth on it? Don't you want to talk about the Chris Edwards situation and everything? I figured you wanted to really go in depth on that.
Here's what I'll say on it. I'm not sure there is going to be anybody who is going to do that job better than him in my time knowing him. On what he would have brought to that. He made a very foolish decision, and he knows that. And, you know, that said, it's a shame because I think that spot was meant for him. I've known him for 7 years now. To me, that was the no-brainer hire, the no-brainer person to take over that spot. I didn't know what led to that. I certainly know now. I had thought since I known him that he had to have been a graduate. You know, he made that decision. He is owning it. And now it's kind of getting pushed down the road a little bit with what happens there. But it's a real shame because he was the obvious choice for that seat. And I think he would have done some great stuff with it.
Yeah, I like Chris Edwards too, and I you know, I'm joking about it. I was sad for him when it happened. I was really frustrated with the everybody involved. Mm-hmm. I was frustrated that he, you know, I don't know how he thought that was gonna work out for him. You know, at the school, saying he graduated from the school that hired him, and then you know the people at Playfly, I don't know how they missed that. I don't know how Gilbert missed. I was just confused on the whole situation. But you're right. There was two guys I thought the job was for, three counting you, but not counting you, of the two that I thought we could get was Chris Edwards and Chris Haymire. We ended up with Chris Edwards, was happy. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. And then, you know, Haymire, nobody likes to be second choice. So who knows how it's going to end up. We got to enter them for now, and we'll find out soon enough after football season's over who's going to be the long-term guy.
I have a question for you that just came to mind. I haven't thought about it, so – I'm going to throw it out there on purpose because maybe that'll make good podcast gold. I don't know. I'm going to throw this out to the panel. So we have Jim Zoki for a year, right? Can you bring Edwards back next year? He paid the price. He's taken a lot of money.
You can, but it's going to take some people not having egos. It's going to take some people that admit that they, and I'm not talking about Chris Edwards so much. I'm talking about other people admitting that they, you know, he's not the only one that was culpable here. You got to do your background checks before you make announcements. So I think you could. I think it could have been done to begin with. I think they could have gotten a room with Chris Edwards and had a conversation with him and said, hey, look, you've embarrassed us. This is bad, but this is what we're going to do. We still think you're the best man for the job. We're going to require that you finish your degree, and we're going to deduct your salary 5%, 10% until you finish that degree. And we're going to release a statement, and you're going to apologize, but we're not going to fire you. You could have handled things that way, and what a good story that would have been, you know. But people's reaction is to is always people don't want to ever be creative and think outside the box and maybe do what's best for everybody. Somebody gets embarrassed. You've embarrassed me. You said you were an alum, so now we're going to fire you. So could they bring him back? Yeah. Will they? No.
Yeah, not to get on my high horse about this, guys, but like, you know, what's wrong with giving people second chances? I mean, like, where did this come from? Where we just can't give, you know, people make mistakes. People make mistakes. It's not like he committed a crime. It's not like he hurt anybody. I mean, yeah, this was a mistake. So I guess what I'm saying is, I could honestly, if next year came around, would I care if East Carolina decided to hire him, if he's the best guy for the job? That's what it comes down to. Are you the best guy for the job? I wouldn't care. I'd be willing to give him a second chance. But unfortunately, that's not really the way the world works these days. I mean, you know, especially when you're talking about college universities, you know, I just don't, I don't see it happening.
Egos get involved, man. I mean, you know, you had John Gilbert introduced. They had a welcome event, and he was introducing him to people as an alumni, a graduate, and then found out a day later he wasn't. And when you get your feelings hurt, egos get hurt. It's just not going to happen. I wish it could. I really do. I'd love to see him back with the job next year.
Haymeier's not going to take the job next year because
no. If Haymeier wanted it, he would have taken it. He would have taken it now.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to say this, and we'll move on to talk to our great friend. The thing is, for me, is I think after a year the dust settles, you bring him in and have a huge for me personally, I would tell him, you know, to go out and do a press conference, whatever you have to do to apologize to the public and say that you're going to work on the degree. Maybe he could go ahead and start working on the degree now.
That would be a smart move on his part to go ahead and finish the degree now at East Carolina. If he wanted the job in the future, I don't know, you know, I don't know what the man's home life is like. I don't know if he's got kids. I don't know if he needs to find another job immediately. Does he have time to finish his degree? Did Duke hire him back? I don't know. Corey, do you know, did Duke hire him back as for baseball, or is he completely without a job?
I haven't heard what's happening there. I've had a little bit of chat with Chris since everything happened here, and I'll keep that between us, right. But no, I don't know where things stand with that. I know how much he was looking forward to this job in that position. And so I don't know this time next year what will happen here, both with him and with ECU, but I know the work that he would have done there. And if he's going to get remembered for a decision that he's made here, then I think that is pretty unfortunate, because he's a really damn good broadcaster and frankly a better person.
Yeah. No. And here's another thing, guys, that I heard, and I don't know because I wasn't a part of the process, but I was told, because people said, of course they're judging him, and I'm going, we've all embellished. I know it's a lie. I'm not trying to get in there, but I was told that they said the requirements for the job is a 4-year degree.
It was part of the requirements. But I don't know. I guess you're saying there, you're put in a situation where you're forced to lie. I don't know. Who knows?
I like Chris a lot, so I'm not one a guy to bash.
No, I think all four of us would be perfectly fine with him being brought back as the voice of the Pirates.
He's a guy, Corey, that you like you, that I know you're young, and I know how much you love East Carolina.
I'm getting old.
Oh, whatever. But you're a guy, what I'm saying is, you're a radio guy. You're a guy that could stay at a school like a Tulane for a long, long time if you want to. You've got New Orleans. That's what I told people. You have a single guy. He's young. He's in one of the best cities in America. Great university in Tulane. You know, as much as I want you back, I totally get it, you know, and you gave us a great great time. As a matter of fact, I miss having the interactions with you, with the baseball games, and a lot of fans do, but I know how happy you are at Tulane, and personally, I don't blame you one bit for staying at Tulane, you know, because that it's a great school. You just won the Cotton Bowl. The basketball is great. I'm sure baseball will be back up. So you're calling all the sports, and you're living the dream, man.
The only problem I have right now is that it's been 100 degrees every day for two straight weeks.
Oh.
And it's killing me down here. Outside of that, like I mean it when I say I'm deeply happy where I am. And so I'm thrilled that year three is coming up for me here, because I think there are the potential to have some very exciting things coming over the next 10 months here at Tulane University.
The number 23 ranked Tulane Green Wave.
Yeah.
And by the way, Alan Vick on the Chris Edwards situation real quick. This young man simply made a mistake. Chris is a tremendous broadcaster. I certainly hope he's able to put it all this behind him and work his way back up the ladder. If talent matters, he will be able to do that. Unfortunately, in the broadcast industry, as many and any walk of life, this is going to follow him for a while. Hopefully he can overcome this and have a long and successful career, because he certainly has the ability, no doubt, Alan. And, you know, hey, I would say to every person at the administration at ECU, they're not perfect. We don't have, we've done many shows where they're not perfect. And the same thing as far as Playfly has been a huge disaster. So I'll say that publicly, because
no, I'm sure Corey is just cringing right now.
I know. So I have a great segue here for Corey. So we can get off.
I'm a proud Learfield employee.
There you go. Yes.
So we had Learfield until a year ago. I love Learfield. Miss Learfield dearly.
So I'm changing topics. Yeah. So I'm changing topics. I was thinking of you a few weeks ago, Corey. I saw a quote from Caleb Williams, the quarterback of USC. And I'll be honest, it really kind of pissed me off. Caleb Williams quoted on why Tulane beat USC in the Cotton Bowl. He says, "We didn't want to be there." Now, I thought that was the most unprofessional response I've heard a while. What did you happen to catch that, and what are your thoughts?
No, that actually did not cross my radar. Shockingly, not a lot of USC folks are interacting with Tulane folks over the last 6 months or so. He's lying. I mean, and he knows he's lying. He had an unbelievable game. And for him to say that he didn't want to be there after the type of game that he had is bull crap. I want to go after a kid here. He is a kid, but
probably makes more money than you, Corey. Go after him.
It's a valid point. He does probably make a lot more money than I do. If anyone watched that game and thought that USC was in one of those types of moods where they were that close to a playoff, they biffed it in the conference title game, and then they were stuck playing a little Tulane. I don't know if you could have watched that game and thought that. They led for 59 minutes and 53 seconds of that.
The last 7 seconds, they didn't want to be there.
Yeah, just the last 7 seconds. The things that Tulane exploited on them defensively, a lot of teams exploited on them all year. They lit up a very good Tulane defense. They lit us up. They did that to everybody this year. You know, the question heading in was whether or not Caleb Williams is even going to play because of a slight ankle injury. Well, he played. He made it very clear in December that he was going to play that game. He was determined to play that game and end the season right. So if he did really come out a few weeks ago and say he didn't want to be there, he is absolutely lying. There's no two ways about that.
Yeah, and what does it really matter? I mean, honestly, he can say what he wants to say. The result still stands. Tulane beat USC in the Cotton Bowl. He can say he didn't want to be there. He can say the rest of the team didn't want to be there, but he wanted to be there. He can say whatever reason, it doesn't change the results of the game. Tulane beat USC in the Cotton Bowl. That will be forever in the annals of history. The Trojans will have to live with it. They lost to the Green Wave in the Cotton Bowl, but I'm glad to hear your passionate response from that, Corey. But as we look forward to the 2023 season, you guys in the coaches' poll today ranked number 23. I believe it's the first time in your program's history you guys have been preseason in the coaches' poll. So congratulations on that. Just overall, I mean, you guys have you lost a lot, but you got a lot coming back at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it here, Kyle. I think the biggest, I mean, the losing Tajay Spears is he's about as irreplaceable as you can get for everything he did for Tulane offensively, especially the last six games of the year. There's no, single answer to putting that back into place, but I know Tulane's pretty high in the running back room that they have. I think what's going to be helpful here is you have a fourth year starting quarterback, Michael Pratt. You have his entire offensive line with one exception back. You have an entire defensive line back. Your cornerbacks are back. And so you're right, Kyle. There's a lot that returns. The things that you lose, two defensive captains, a linebacker spot, your safeties are all new. There's a lot of coaching turnover that happens at a school this level after you have a year like this. But you didn't lose your head coach, and now it's the longest tenured head coach in this conference. And so he has had to deal with a lot of turnover in his time at Tulane after far worse years than this. And so the fact that he's navigated these waters before, and then he has his best recruiting class ever coming in, and a couple NFL coaches to go along with the new staff that he's brought in. There's a reason why, multiple reasons why expectations are as lofty as they are here now. I think you start with just the man at the top. Like, I mean, to have Willie Fritz still around and still pulling the strings on this when he orchestrated the largest turnaround in college football history, that's why, the good vibes are still pretty strong after everything that happened last year, heading into this year, even with the turnover that exists in some key spots.
You guys, do you like, or I shouldn't say you, do you sense the team likes having a lot of expectations on UTSA? A lot of people picking them to win the league rather than Tulane being the all-out favorite. Everybody's saying the Green Wave is going to repeat. Does the team seem to like having a little bit of a lot of people have UTSA as the favorite to win the league. Is that a little bit of a motivating factor?
I don't think it hurts. I mean, this program, since I would probably wager 1999, has never been the hunted until this year. 98 was an undefeated year in Conference USA, and then 99 they came back and everyone was chasing them and they got. And so the fact that you bring in, six teams, but one of them has dominated their previous league the last 2 years. I mean, you have two reigning conference champions in this league, which is hard to find. And so the fact that, that there are some publications that are picking UTSA, the preseason conference poll has Tulane at the top. You just mentioned the coaches poll has Tulane in there. No other American team or anything outside of the Power 5, 4, whatever it is now, are in the top 25. There are still some big things that are picking Tulane to do this year, but you're right. There are a good number of people, a good number of publications that have UTSA winning this league. A big part of last year is that Tulane kind of crept up on a lot of folks, and Tulane took that to heart. Even the last week of the year at Cincinnati, no one really gave them much of a crack. And then you're hosting a championship game, but you're hosting UCF and Gus Malzahn. And so there was still some kind of question about whether or not this was for real. Now everyone knows this team's for real, but there's another team coming in that's pretty dang real too. And so I don't think it hurts at all that this is not, rubber stamped heading into the year that everyone thinks Tulane is the bell cow here. This team thrives on a little bit of being overlooked. And so if they feel they're getting slightly aggrieved by some folks this year, I think they'll channel that the best way they can.
I just realized you got the Cincinnati, UCF, and in Southern California, all three in a row.
Maybe, three in a row. They knocked off Houston in the last season as well. So, I mean, the teams that left for the Big 12, the team that's leaving for the Big 10, I don't know where else anyone else is going at this point. But, it was a hell of a year. There's no two ways around it.
Yeah.
The Pirates picked six this year. I thought that was too low.
Before we finished last year.
I don't even remember
what we finished. We finished six and won eight games still.
I know. I'm just, for me personally, I think people haven't done their homework on the guys that are coming up. And they say, you don't have Keaton Mitchell anymore. You don't have Holton Ahlers. But we have more than two players. And there is a lot of offense we lost. But there's a lot of guys that – one thing about Houston is he's built the depth. I know how much he thinks of your coach, Corey, and has a lot of respect for Fritz. You know, building – Fritz and Houston are the same, and they – take their time, and they're building that program instead of trying to microwave it. They're building it the right way. You don't hear all the off, you know, the field problems or anything like that. And so for me, I'm going, okay, the same way you guys should have probably been, you could be argued to be first. We should be, I think, around fourth. It's not, you know, six and four, you know, fourth or six really doesn't really matter, I know, but I just thought that would be my honest gut opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Tulane last year was picked seventh. I mean, there's a firm grasp, certainly here, even though this is new territory for this program, that what was decided in Dallas with that poll, even what came out today with the USA Today poll, means jack squat. Like, I mean, because you're right, there's probably one man who maybe knows the ins and outs of all 133 FBS teams. That's Phil Steele.
I thought you were going to say me.
And Kyle Barber's a close. You're a 1A.
Don't forget Bubba from China Grove.
Yeah, I'm actually this year I suck. I really have done less research this year than I ever have. So I'll defer to Bubba as number two.
Yeah, if he's done dodging tornadoes, then we can ask him.
He'll probably do, and I would say you probably would do better with having more of your mind instead of so bogged down on 130 teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if anybody knows a full deep dive in all now 14 teams of this conference, like, can read it, like, you just get spotted off right now. I think you'd be hard pressed to find those types of people for this league, especially with the new blood coming in. You know, Phil Steele and his team put together that book, and who did he pick to win the league? UTSA.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's known here. There's no question about it. So when you say, like, East Carolina picks six because they don't really know, Tulane was picked to win the league by the poll by the league, picked in the coaches poll. You know, how much can they really discern what's going on here with the roster and the new coaches that are coming in? I don't know if you'll get a ton of clear answers for that. That tends to be the case where if you win the league the year before, you're going to be picked to win it the next year. Willie Fritz even said that in media day. He's like, all it means is we won it last year. Like, that's all you did. This league, I think we've seen now, and what we're starting 10 years of it. There's usually going to be a weird little wild card thrown in. How successful that wild card is up to them. But last year it was a 12-2 team that nobody saw coming. Now, this year, you know, you mentioned what Mike Houston and Willie Fritz are similar, and I can tell you it was my chats with Coach Fritz. They're very good friends, and they talk quite a bit. They had similar roads to travel to get to where they are now with, you know, JUCO level, FCS level, and just taking time to get to where they are. They went the long way to be in their spots, and now they're the two of the veteran coaches in the league. And so there is a very strong mutual respect, and they kind of, you know, from what I hear, like, I haven't had any interaction with Coach Houston, programs are run somewhat similarly from what I've heard and what I see up close on this side of things. And
similar,
so,
backgrounds also.
What's that?
Similar backgrounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's, you know, they weren't handed anything to get to where they got, like, and so that's why I don't, you know, East Carolina at six, you know, when the media and the coaches or whomever puts together that league poll, I think it's the media, just looks at that. Like, I think they see you lose the record setting quarterback and a speed demon, and a good wide receiver too. And so
two good wide receivers
too. And so, yeah, I mean, the questions are obvious, but I think what it leans to is what kind of the first question was from Kyle there is how does this team overcome some of the big losses that happened after this year roster wise? Well, it's a really damn good coach. I mean, and that's what ECU's got too. And so nothing's going to be thrown at Mike Houston this year that he hasn't seen already. Nothing's going to be thrown at Willie Fritz this year that he hasn't seen already. You got two of the smarter coaches going in college football in these two right now, and they took their time and had their diligence to get to where they are now.
Yeah, I think if you look at the league as a whole, obviously, UTSA, Tulane, SMU, wherever you want to put them, at 1, 2, and 3. I think that's pretty easy. I think after that,
Memphis in that group.
Well, I don't know, man. Memphis hasn't shown me they can stop air. So, yeah, they can score, but will they ever play defense? But they certainly have a lot back on offense. They should be able to score a lot of points. Florida Atlantic, a lot of people are big on. I think Tom Herman's a wonderful coach. I think they've recruited well prior to him getting there. But is he going to step in year one and have them in the upper echelon of the league? He might. He might not. I think if you look at some teams behind the, I think if you look at some teams behind the Pirates, a team that I think is being slept on big time is Temple. Temple's got a lot back. I think EJ Warner is the real deal. And nobody's talking about them. You want to talk about a surprise team, I'd keep an eye on the Temple Owls.
Yeah. And, you know, guys, think about it from this perspective. What's the first thing you look at in the preseason when you pick up a magazine and you're doing your research on teams? The first thing you look at is the starting quarterback. And, you know, you look at Tulane, right? You have, Pratt coming back for – it's got to be his 10th year down there.
Yeah.
It feels like he's been there forever. And then conversely, you know, you look at ECU, right? And, you know, the big question mark here, we all know about Mason Garcia's talent. We know about, you know, Corey, I'm sure you heard about the arm strength and the physical abilities. The question is he able on Saturdays to go in and read defenses?
Right.
Because if I'm a defensive coordinator against a young quarterback, I'm throwing the book at him. I'm mixing up coverages. I'm disguising blitzes. I mean, I'm going to throw everything at him. So the question is, it's not the physical ability, but it's can he read defenses? Can he make the checks? Is he mature enough to handle that? And if he is what we think he could be, because we all think very highly of him, this could be a surprise season for ECU. If not, then we're picked appropriately at number six. But it all comes back to what you have a quarterback, right, Corey?
Totally. I mean, that's why I put Memphis kind of in that upper tier because of Seth Hennigan and what he can do and what he has shown in his time there. And I also get the sense just whenever we see Memphis and the environment around there and the intense focus on Ryan Silverfield, this is kind of a bit of a make or break for them. On top of what they're trying to do just, athletic department wise and fundraise and everything there. We've seen a lot of schools, a lot of programs in the league and a lot of sports kind of make changes in hopes of kind of bolstering fundraising goals. I think that's why Memphis, you know, there's going to be a lot on them. It's how they handled that. But they got a stud quarterback to help lead the way there. And that's why, you know, I like throwing Temple into that mix. We never see Temple here. I have not seen Temple since I got here. They're not on our schedule this year. Like, I don't know when we'll ever see Temple on our schedule here at Tulane. But, I mean, it starts there. It's the mix of what's your quarterback situation, how many reps does he have, And for the case here, I would throw in what's the coaching situation around that quarterback, because technically Michael Pratt is starting with his fourth offensive coordinator in Slay Nagel here, but last year Slay Nagel was calling most of the plays for most of the year, but he was not the offensive coordinator. So there's a lot smoother transition heading into this year because Michael Pratt already knows the schemes that Slay Nagel likes to run. And so, you know, I think you can kind of go that step next and see just what the coaching situation is surrounding how many reps a quarterback has. And you can kind of go from there. There's not a ton of concern around here about, frankly, making up the lost production of Tajay Spears, even though you're not going to find one back to do that, because I think you're going to see this team throw the ball more because they trust a fourth year starting quarterback to do so, and a pretty deep wide receiving core now. And you know, ECU, you know, when you put that logic to it, you know, ECU maybe was picked a little bit higher because no one knows what their quarterback is going to be, but you know, we've seen bits and pieces of Mason Garcia. And you're right, the skill set's there. Now he's going to be thrown into action. He's going to be thrown into action at Michigan to start off, most likely. And that's not going to be easy, to say the least. But if there's some patience with him in that first couple weeks of the year, we'll see if that skill set that we know is there kind of finally emerges here now that he's the guy.
I don't have a problem where we were picked. If you want to put us one spot above the fifth, because to me, Florida Atlanta is a bit of an unknown, but that would be about it. Not saying we can't finish above that. I just don't have a problem with where we are preseason. Corey, I had a couple quick questions for you, and I'm going to probably step out of here early and turn it over to the other three guys. First, you mentioned American Media Day. Your thoughts on Biff Poggi?
I love the guy. I don't know why. You can tell he comes from the Jim Harbaugh school, doesn't he? I mean, he comes from that line of coaches. What I found funny to me is that he got three questions asked to him.
He was mad about that.
He was mad. Willie Fritz got two. We won the league last year. He got two questions asked to him at Media Day. So Biff's mad about that. Now, Willie should be irate. But he's not. I don't mind at all with a program that needed some fresh blood, that is now entering a much stronger league than what they were just in, that's still very much in its infancy. I don't mind kind of lighting some sparks like he's doing. If it doesn't pan out, then we'll look back on this. There's no question. I don't know if it's going to pan out this year. That's another team that we don't see on our schedule here at Tulane. We don't see Charlotte this year. And so you're talking about great unknown. I have no idea what they're going to look like.
A lot of grad transfers. A lot of guys from the portal, I should say.
Yeah. And you can very much build and win like that now. I don't mind at all. If he's trying to inject some life and some interest into that program right at a very important time for that program. And so if he's ruffling feathers in your neck of the woods or up in Boone or wherever, that's fine in my mind.
He's doing it on purpose. Like I said,
I think he is. Based on what he's saying, how he's kind of conducting himself, you're seeing some kind of viral videos from Charlotte coming on their social media about how he's interacting with his players, and he's a much more affable guy than what we've seen here in the media. I don't mind at all, especially for where Charlotte is and what they are leaping into. Someone trying to kind of captivate a little bit there and draw some focus to them. If the wins and the losses don't work the way that the 49ers would like them to, you have someone that's getting focused. You have someone that's getting attention. And in this day and age of just how quickly guys can switch around and bounce around at programs, and how quickly schools bounce around at different conferences, and in this weird age we live in now, you're fighting for eyes, you're fighting for ears, and He's doing it, and I don't mind at all what he's trying to do. He will have to back it up at some point. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but it will have to come in wins and losses. But if you want to kind of make a name for yourself, make a name for Charlotte right now, full steam ahead as far as I'm concerned.
And then my other question for you, and then I'm going to drop out of here, is do you think there's any realistic chance that the Pac-4, Oregon State, Washington State, Stanford, Cal end up in the American? Or any of the four? Because I do think there's a chance you can see Stanford, Cal in the ACC, then Oregon State, Washington State trying to decide if they want to come here or go to the Mountain West.
I am so tired of this. And it's not you, Kyle, asking this. Just this whole thing. The last 2 weeks have been just exhausting with this. Like, and, you know, I saw pop up today that maybe the AAC is trying to, you know, is doing some due diligence on this. And I saw the report about the ACC and the Bay Area schools. We're losing the plot with this bad. I think to see what's been a overwhelmingly negative reaction to the last week. I don't know if anyone really looked at Colorado jumping back to the Big 12 as like a seismic catastrophe.
Right.
But I mean, where in the world are we thinking that this is ending up here?
And
the ACC now trying to jump in here and lightly and was like, hey, let's really make this hard on everybody. There's one simple answer to this, but we're beyond simple answers at this point. No one cares about simple answers.
And geographical conferences.
And that's the Mountain West and these four remaining coming together in some capacity, and then everyone shuts up for a while.
The problem with that is there's no money to be made with that, and that's why there's no money to be made with. And Stanford, I just, that is one way, one reason I think the American does have a shot. Stanford's they are a very arrogant bunch. They are not going to want to be there. I could literally, besides Air Force, I don't think there's another school in the Mountain West they'd want to be in there with. But they would want to be in the same league with Tulane and Rice and Tulsa and Navy and SMU. So that's where I do think the American, if the ACC doesn't take Stanford and Cal, nobody's going to the Pac-12. That I think we can pretty much say the Pac-12 is not going to invade the American and the Mountain West. There's no TV deal. They can't promise them anything. They who waits until the last, till 0 hour to get a media deal in place? Now there's no way for them to get a media deal in place. So you don't know what you're going to get. And I'll leave it here. And not that anybody cares what I think. What I think is going to end up happening, I think the ACC is going to get involved. I think Stanford and Cal join football only. And then Oregon State, Washington State to the Mountain West because they're going to have nowhere else to go. And they won't see enough money. To come, there's that point. If all four of them can't come, I don't see two of them coming to the American and the ESPN money going up enough to matter. But Corey, it's good talking to you, man. I'll leave it to Matt and Dave for the rest of the show. I have something I have to do. Good luck to the Wave this year, except when they play the Pirates, and maybe when they play Southern Miss. Also, I'm a big Golden Eagles fan too. So of course, I know you guys have that one circled, but.
Yes, we do. Kyle from LaGrange Barber. Pleasure to talk to you, my man.
All right, man.
Later, Kyle. Guys. Later, Kyle. So I just want to jump in like really quick on that because, see, I personally don't see Stanford and Cal. Oh, Corey, you got a little block there.
Yeah, I'm trying to
there
get
you go, Corey. There we go.
I'm working on it.
I don't see Stanford and Cal going to the ACC because it's just two teams. In other words, you have one travel partner from the West Coast. You're playing all your games on the East Coast.
That's not going to happen.
You're going to have half of your games, five times a year at minimum. You're going to be traveling across multiple time zones to the East Coast. I think that would make some more sense to me if all four teams potentially were going to be added. But to just add two teams from the West Coast, I don't see that as a – I just don't see it happening. It just doesn't work. in my opinion. But what the hell? I mean, what do I know? I mean, I'm wrong on everything regarding expansion. My perfect scenario right now would be the remaining four teams and the Mountain West form a super conference with the American. And I think that would be exciting for people. I think it would generate some TV revenue. But what do I know?
I tend to, you know, logic says that, you know, Stanford and Cal and the ACC don't quite mesh. But again, we're kind of out of logic by this point. So to me, it's if Stanford and Cal were investing as heavily in their athletic departments as the LA schools or the Washingtons and Oregons or even like the Arizona schools, they probably would have been snagged by someone by now. But that, you know, Stanford likes to spread the wealth in their athletic departments and their programs, and Cal has had issues in their athletic department for a long time. So I don't know, even if they get ACC money, theoretically, the travel that they're going to have to offset here with their non-football teams, which everyone has forgotten about in this. And now that this has all happened, this is coming to the light here of volleyball teams traveling cross country and whatnot. And Stanford cares a ton about all their programs. I just don't see how it makes sense for those two, how it makes sense for the ACC, which your most westward school in the ACC is Louisville. Like, I mean, at least the Big Ten, you got a Nebraska, like, I mean, sitting out there, and that's still not close to a Seattle or a Los Angeles, but you're talking about completely across the country in the ACC. And if Stanford and Cal, who have not had the as much fervent nature of really piling money into their athletic departments as all those other Pac-12 coastal schools has, want to start flying to Syracuse and Miami and Charlottesville for these things. Like, I mean, well, I mean, we are beyond the threat is way out of the hands now. Like, I mean, we are far past the point of where we should be with this, which is football should have been its own entity by this point, and all the other sports stay in these regional conferences, or even the American's not very regional, but this still somewhat works. But now it's very evident how little care is actually being taken on student athlete well-being outside of this one sport. And so if Stanford and Cal, who have made it very clear over the years how much they care about the person more than their athletic ability, and are not willing to forego a lot to kind of counterbalance that, which is, I'm not saying it's the wrong decision, it's their decision, something that, you know, that's happened to Tulane for quite a bit. If they want to suddenly throw that out the window to go join an ACC or an American or something like that, then I mean, what else in the last 2 weeks? You know, it's all this is. It's just some very rich adults looking at TV numbers and deciding the fate of college sports. And that is not a good place to be.
It's funny, you know, Corey, sometimes Dave and I joke around about, you know, the funniest words to me in college football are student athlete. Oh. Because it's just gotten to the point now. Now, we're going to be able to call Stanford and Cal's bluff very soon, because, you know, if by some bizarre chance they were to wind up in the ACC, we all know it's about, at the end of the day, it's all about money. And to your point, it just doesn't make any sense. It's, you know, it's what's best for those students. What's going to make the decision ultimately is TV revenue. And that's what it's going to come down to. And I just don't see it happening personally, but I tend to be wrong on this stuff. So,
well, just like you were talking about, Matt, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that with the super conference we were talking about, if you take the four pack, four teams, I guess is what it's called now, and you take, say, San Diego State, Boise State, you add, basically you have 10 schools on one side of the, the western side from Texas west, and you have all the other eastern schools in American, attend. So you have a 20-team super conference. I think that would definitely work, and you just have to do like a, I would say for volleyball and some of the other sports, just have everybody playing in their division and have like one crossover game where you have to come east, or that way you cut your expenses way, way down versus, like you said, Corey, it makes no sense to have a volleyball team going from all the way from Pullman all the way here to Greenville.
Into College Park, or I'm sorry, you're going to Washington State. Yeah, Pullman to Greenville, Pullman to Boca Raton. Like, I mean, it's just I mean, you're right, Matt. Like, the term student athlete in college football is being well stretched by this point. I think that college football will find a way to be fine in all of this, even if all these – and that's kind of the problem with all this. The people that are making these decisions know that we're going to keep watching and we're going to still, you know, all right, well, Oregon's not going to play Oregon State, but they'll go play Ohio State, like, and so we'll just click on the game again, and we're just always going to be around. So they know that there's really no bargaining chip that we as fans have. Student athletes still very much a thing in Olympic sports, and I call three sports here. You know, I do football, men's basketball, and baseball, but our setup here at Tulane means I get to interact with all 17 sports here. And all the offices are piled on top of each other. And so I know all the coaches, I know some of these student athletes in track and swimming and volleyball and beach volleyball and sailing here that we have at Tulane. And I know, like, there's just no thought about what's going to happen to these kids where student athlete still applies in that sense of the word, where they're on commercial flights in the middle of the week to go play these conference games in whatever sport that they're in. None of the people making these decisions care about that. And that's where the real problems lie. Like, that's if we're all bemoaning, a lot of people bemoaning at the regional rivalries that are gone and the sports, not what it was back in the early 90s. And they're right. College football will find a way to be fine here, even if we don't like the end result of two power conferences. It's everything else in college sports. It's all the things that Stanford treats very strongly that has them sitting on the outside right now, despite the fact they've been the most successful athletic department in the last three decades for what their programs do. Just nobody who's making these decisions cares. And that's the really revolting part of this to me. We just need this to stop right now and have some people with some sense actually sit down and say, what the hell are we doing here? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, no doubt. Appreciate your thoughts on that, Corey. I wanted to take it back to Tulane for a second. I had a question for you. You mentioned earlier that coming off this, I guess you would call it a dream season for the Green Wave, obviously the goal now is to sustain that success and make that a consistent thing on the football field. Sounds like you were able to parlay that into a really strong recruiting class. I'm curious, has that had an effect on season tickets?
Yeah, I mean, it has. They've been blown out of the water here. I mean, the last check, our season ticket sales were up 800%, which,
wow,
I don't fully comprehend. I went to a public college. I could not have gone to Tulane. And so I don't know, like that's big to me. I'm talking to our ticketing director later in the week for the podcast that I do here, just to kind of get the skinny on everything here. I know our homecoming game has already sold out. It sold out before the Ole Miss game in week two, and that game's going to sell out. Wow. I mean, it has been, it's been massive. And when I first got here, Matt, I was told about how there's been a lost generation of fans in this city to Tulane. And this brought a lot of them back and hopefully started a new generation of fans. It's really since, you know, I talked about the 98 year, but it was really the 2005 and Katrina year when everybody had to leave this place and Tulane was playing in 12 different stadiums across the year and just had a miserable year. And it's been uphill sledding ever since. Well, last year was a breakthrough, a huge breakthrough, into where this city was really wrapped up in this team. And that just hasn't happened here in a long, long time. So yeah, the intensity is back. The focus is back. There's more media coming out to our practices. There's more angry wave flags in the French Quarter when it was usually just dominated by Saints and LSU. Like, you're seeing it everywhere now because people really took to this team and took to this school. And that's been a long time in the making. And now you're seeing it with the ticket sales. And now it's kind of keeping them around right now. That's the next question. It's fans here want to be greedy about this, and knowing that amidst everything that's happening in college sports right now, when it comes to football, if you have a year like last year, next season, you're playing for a national championship, you're in the playoff. And so like they know here that the door has opened a little bit for Tulane football to really be a name and not just a one-off. The schedule is a lot harder this year than it was last year. They are in this new spot of everyone looking at them. And so they're how they handle this is going to be the key to everything. But there's no denying that in a city that loves its sports and a city that if you show it love, it'll love you back. Tulane football finally showed this place some love last year, and they have responded in kind by setting some records in the ticket sales.
It's exciting. And in fact, you guys, we can relate as far as we always hear about the brand names, but it's great when a Tulane, for example, an American pulls off what they did. And then you guys have, I have a huge amount of respect, as the guys know, I say it all the time, even when you're not on Corey, how much I like Coach Fritz. I like him a lot. I've done things the right way. And so I look forward to, it's going to be a great year. And obviously, do you have a surprise team? Obviously, we know how Tulane's great, but is there a surprise team for you before we let you go?
And the American? I don't know if it qualifies as a surprise. I think Rice is getting a little bit overlooked. They were a bowl team last year. I'm fascinated to see Kevin Wilson at Tulsa. It's been a bit since Tulsa's been really good, but you don't have to look that far back to see that that program has had some great moments to it. It's a school a lot like Tulane. And so Kevin Wilson taking the reins of that, I think that is frankly the most intriguing new coach, even factoring in Trent Dilfer at UAB. But yeah, you talk about a 14-team league. It doesn't seem like one person's talking about Rice at all, and that was a pretty good team last year. And so I think that could be a team that might slither up here, and suddenly when you look in November, they've got they're in position to make some damage. Temple was a good pick from Kyle, but yeah, I'll Rice and Tulsa, those are two teams that I think maybe are getting slightly undervalued here.
It sounds good, man. I tell you what, I can't wait for the season. We got to have you back on, obviously, when we play Tulane. But we do have one final question for you, baseball related. So I'm going to throw this up for Robert. Would you mind asking Corey if T.O. Banks is still at Tulane? He was one of the best players I've ever seen. Strong bat speed and a great arm. Sorry about it being a baseball question.
The answer is yes. He is still at Tulane. He played in the Cape this summer. And so he will be back for year three. I'm not entirely sure how he did at the Cape, but the week he had at the conference tournament was otherworldly. I actually just met I met a couple of our new baseball players today as I was leaving campus, and one of them's a former Pirate. We got a Connor Rasmussen transferring over here, so he and I chatted for a little bit, and so that was I got another Pirate down here. We never overlapped in my time in Greenville. He came in the year after I was gone. But yeah, so he's down here, and we talked a little bit of ECU baseball in Greenville living a little bit as he was baking in 110 degree heat index down here. So yeah, T.O. is still around. He's one of a few holdovers. They're going to be more new than old on this Tulane baseball team when they start up fall ball here in October. But yeah, T.O. Banks, as long as he can stay healthy, I'm not sure there's a better player in this league, even though the league looks very different. We're not entirely sure what the league's going to look like in baseball next year, but I mean, that guy is an absolute stud.
It's going to be great. Corey, man, how can people listen to you? I know the Varsity app, there's a lot of great things. Plus, give everybody your Twitter handle. I guess we got that up. I have to say X now. I'm so over that.
X Twitter. Yeah, it's up there along with my company's Twitter right there. Nicely done. Learfield will love that. The Varsity Network is a Learfield app, and I've not heard otherwise. I believe that's full go here for streaming all your favorite Tulane athletics events. So you can find me on there, and you got the Twitters up there, so I will let the visuals take it from there. But it's always a pleasure to be on with the Sports Objective. I hope Bubba wasn't sucked into a tornado tonight. It appears he got maybe close. So hope all is well on that front, because I like Bubba and I prefer he not be leveled by a tornado.
And no, yes.
Bubba's indestructible. He's been messaging. He's doing all right. He's safe. Thank God.
He's texting, holding onto a tree at the same time. So I think he's okay, though. But anyway, have a great night, bro. And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, boys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, bye-bye. Corey. Take care, man.
See you guys.
Bye. Yeah, Matt. So I got to say that one of the things I'm hoping you'll help us out on is we're very excited. We have Martin County Football, my alma mater. Now they've combined, the two schools have combined into one. So for athletics wise, and so we're excited about that. We're going to have Martin County Football, and that'll be every Friday night. Yeah, coming up with high school football. So we're looking forward to doing that. And I know that you're a football junkie like us. We're looking for sponsors, so people want to do that. But a legendary Harold Robinson, Matt's going to be my play. I'm going to try my best at play-by-play, and he'll do better. I'm sure he'll do better at the analysis than I will play-by-play. But our good friend Charles Smith, also Bubba, is going to be back in the TSO studios, and maybe you will too. But we're looking forward for a great broadcast, and I know it's going to be fantastic.
That's awesome, and, I think it's going to be a great addition to the show. And you know, bottom line, Dave, is football is right around the corner now. And, you know, like I said last week, I'm trying not to wish my summer away. Like I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy these. We don't get much nice weather up here in the Northeast. So, you know, it's just a short time we get. So I'm going to try to enjoy these last few weeks, but you can be sure like when August 20th rolls around, I'm going to be in full college football mode. And, I think I'm excited about the programming we have this year. I think it's going to be better than ever, and it's going to be an awesome year.
Yeah, speaking of which, Monday night's Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors. Tuesday is our prior preview. Two guys named Sonny and Semenzo on Wednesday nights.
Yes, sir.
Two of my favorite friends, especially former football players. You guys are awesome. And here's another one people don't know about. Our good friend Stevie Fly, along with Kyle, that's going to be a dynamic duo if I've ever heard. Just Another Sports Podcast. That's every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. Thursday, the Inside Slant, a weekly college football preview. We have a Pirate's Life for me. The Bubble does a great job. Saturday, Sights and Sounds. And, of course, our Sunday football playback presented by L&K Custom Homes. Want to give them a shout out. Our other sponsor, one of our favorites, is Porky's Backyard Barbecue. They're in right in Williamston. A great. I tell you what, if you haven't been there, you can do yourself a favor. Drive, make the drive to Porky's in Williamston. It's worth it. We have a lot of fun with Mark, our good friend Mark Holiday. And thanks to them again, you know, Matt, they actually had us there for our college football preview show. They invited us. It was not, I was going to do it here at home, but he said, hey, if you're going to do that, then I'm a sponsor. Come on and come to Porky's. So I can't turn it down, you know?
Yeah. And that worked out great. That was an awesome show. I thought it went really well. So I appreciate them having us.
No question. All right. We're going to definitely have a lot of fun. And I can't wait, man. It's going to be outstanding. Thanks to Kevin KK Walker for L&K Custom Homes. I know that he's been really instrumental over the last 3 years, and he's another guy that has definitely helped us out many, many years. We appreciate him. Do you have anything before we go, bro? I know we've been going long tonight, but I just want to give you a shout out. I appreciate all your insight. I appreciate we have our good friend Jeff Carr. We'll have to have him back on the show. He's got a great charity with his sister that we need to talk about. So we'll have him on soon, I know. And we've got a lot of other great guests coming up, right, Matt?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to have get Jeff on here too. And he's doing some really good things, as always. And, we'll definitely work on that. And but that's all I have. Just keeping my fingers crossed about this conference realignment situation, that East Carolina winds up in a good spot at the end of the day. And right now that's been the most, pressing thing on my mind. Yeah. But, we shall see. It's, it's the type of thing, it's out of our hands. So, you just have to see what happens.
No doubt. You and I are big on college realignment, whether we want to or not. It's something I followed way too close. By the way, before we go, I got to say one more thing and we'll get out of here. I want to give a shout out to all our thoughts and prayers of people in China Grove where Bubba lives. He has no power now. Unfortunately, he produces a show. He's on air. He does it all. And I want to give a shout out to him and his family and all the community there in China Grove. I know he's okay. So if you're wondering, he's okay. They just don't have power right now, but we'll send our thoughts and prayers that way. And Matt, thank you so much, man, for all you do. And as always, we appreciate you, dude. We'll see you next time. You've been watching, listen to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it.